Do you see yourself as a farmer?
I would love to be a farmer.
So, Ted, do you see yourself as an astronaut going to the moon?
No, I do not.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, it's episode 59. Let's welcome everybody.
Hey, Trailer Junkies, how are you?
Well, I don't think they can respond. Well, they can. Right, well, they can, but we might not hear them.
Well, they could tell us how they are in their reviews.
There you go. I like that idea. So leave us a review and reply to Ted.
Yeah. How are you, Jimmy?
Oh, a little bit tired. So we got to bed late because we were about to record and power went out last night at Ted's. So went to bed and now we're up here at 6 a.m. recording on a Sunday. So no beer for me today. So I'm having coffee because then I have to go out and train and stuff and I don't feel like riding a bike buzzed.
Yeah.
So how was your week?
Good, good. We saw Audrey had her play. So we saw that 2 out of 3 nights. I guess that makes us bad parents because we didn't see it all 3 nights.
No, that makes you human.
So last night we gave Bryce a respite from seeing High School Musical Junior for the third night in a row. Although he was enjoying it, I was still singing some of the songs because they are very catchy. So it was a good time. But last night we went to see the free in theater thank you from Marvel and I think Disney for Black Panther.
Was that an employee thing?
No, it was not. It was actually it was open to the public, and Marvel just put out that if you went onto the website, logged on, you could get a pair of tickets because they won the Ensemble SAG Awards.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't like getting line with like all the other
No, it was great. You know, you download a little ticket and you went to your AMC or wherever that was offering it and you signed your name on the line with and you got 2 tickets for free. And we were sad a little bit because I don't think the word got out as much as it could have. I mean, we're there on a Saturday night at 7 o'clock and the movie theater's only about a quarter full.
Wow. And this is like a bunch of AMCs. It's not like in Burbank or anything.
It is in Burbank, but it is all over.
No, I know. You went to Burbank, but I mean, it was like, it could have been any of them.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of them.
Cool.
And there was a couple trailers. They did Captain Marvel and Avengers Endgame.
So they were all Marvel trailers.
They were Marvel trailers, and we were expecting to see Spider-Man Far From Home on there, but I guess it was more of a Marvel Disney thing than a Marvel Studios all-encompassing thing.
I know. I don't get it. I tried reading about it, watching YouTube videos about it, and it's like... You know, our little challenge, I load up 16. Well, we watched the first Iron Man, by the way.
Oh, good.
And but anyway, we go through. I put them all in the Netflix DVD queue. And from there, I figured, okay, well, we have them all. And I'm like, wait, we reviewed a bunch of stuff, too, like Venom, Captain Marvel, etc. And, like, none of those are here. So that got the wheels turning as to why. And I just got deeper into it than I needed to. And I'm even more confused than I ever was. So I don't even, whatever. But yeah, so we did watch the first Iron Man, and I think, what's next now? The Hulk, I think, is coming next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Incredible Hulk, yes.
Yeah, and this week, you know, my father-in-law had a bunch of issues with his photos and pictures and all this stuff, so it kind of forced me to look at what I was doing, and since the last update to my Mac OS, they're now saying that Lightroom will not work anymore.
Oh, no.
So the only way, really, on future updates, that is.
Right.
And the only reason that is because I refuse to pay $10 a month in perpetuity to Adobe because, like, it's not worth it to me. So I started moving to Luminar 3, which is made by a company called Skylum. And so far, I like it. It has a few glitches. It crashes a few times. And there's some things that are missing that I do use in Lightroom. Like, for one, if I take, well, I take pictures of slides, right? So rather than scanning, I have a setup to where, like, all the slides that my dad took from the 70s of me and my family and everything, like, I just take a picture of them and I have a raw image taken with my Nikon. And one thing Luminar does not tether, so I do tethered shooting, so I could see it on the computer. Okay, that's one thing. I'm not going to be shooting slides forever. But the other thing, it tags the pictures with the date that it was taken, not the date that I want it to have, and in Luminar I can't change the date. You know, to say, like, whatever, March 15th, 1977, you know, my birthday. Anyway, so it's missing a few things. I go back to Lightroom and stuff, and I still think Lightroom is a fully baked product at about, what is it, 15 years now or something?
Of course, yeah.
Where this is maybe a year and a half old product.
Send the developers some notes.
Oh, I have. I've been back and forth, and they've been helping me through things, and they're like, oh, we never thought of doing that, but... But anyway, no, so far so good. I like it. And oh, and the last cool comment about it, I think, is so I was like using the 30-day trial,
mm-hmm.
and I sent them like, you know, it's pretty good. I like it. And it's like $70. It's not that expensive. So they sent me a $20 discount code.
Oh, cool.
So I was like, well, for $50, sure.
And it's once and done, and it's you know.
One and done, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, instead of, you know, $200 and or $10 a month forever, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they're going to have update costs at some point, but it's probably going to be like, you know, like a $20 update rather than, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. And how about your training?
Yeah, training's going well. Yesterday I was out for about 3 hours in the rain.
Awesome.
Rode out to Halama Beach and a lot of slides and everything. And so they, you know, like in the Midwest or the East, they plow snow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here they plow mudslides. So what happens is like, there's like a slide of mud on the side of the road, essentially. Mm-hmm. So here comes the Caltrans plow dude and he pushes it off the road. But in doing so, he like spreads the mud across the road.
So it's like a slick.
Oh, it's like riding on an ice rink.
Ugh.
You know, so it's like, I mean, for a car, I guess it's no big deal. But, you know, I found the best way to get through it is like really fast. And then like you just kind of like hydroplane over through it.
Hope there's no turns in the middle or anything.
Yeah, oh, I hit a bump so hard yesterday, man. Like, my handlebars slipped. I had to readjust those. I lost a water bottle. Oh, it was brutal. Fortunately, I didn't crash, though. All right, so that's the training, and I'll be out today. So that's why I don't have a beer, because probably in the next 2 hours, I'll be out back out on the bike, probably in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
So how about you? Do you have a beer?
I have a beer. I'm going at, what is it, 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning.
There you go.
And I have this beautiful Los Angeles Ale Works Slope Shake. It's called a Milkshake IPA.
I drink your milkshake.
Very cool. A milkshake. Oh, I like the
little gondola on the label.
Yeah, you got the skis in there.
Yeah, skis, and it's got a great little tagline. It says it's all downhill from here.
There you go.
So, what's the percentage on this? I'll find out. Anyway, let's crack it.
I could slurp my coffee. I mean,
okay. You did a French press of,
yeah, a French press of French roast.
Ah.
Yeah, I like it dark and bold.
So this is a hazy IPA, slightly hazy. It says raisins, marshmallows, oats, vanilla, and lactose. I didn't know lactose is a flavor.
Raisins?
Maybe that's just telling us what's in it.
So if I could complain for a minute.
Yeah.
Are you tired of the hazy IPA by now? Isn't that like a IPA trope? Like everybody's doing them. They're all, you know, it's like that. I go to the liquor store. It's like, all I see are hazy IPAs. I'm just like, man, yeah. Just give me a regular old West Coast piney IPA, you know?
Yeah, I know. I definitely think there's a backlash to the hazy IPA. A lot of people are doing nice, clear, filtered IPAs, and they're wonderful. I think Lord Hobo does a good job on those clear ones. But, you know, I think it's balancing. Way too many people do the hazy IPA, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I don't hold it against anybody.
Oh, I mean, I'll certainly drink one, but I'm just like, I don't know. It's like every, you know, there's like...
Oh, I like this.
There's like the bandwagon everybody jumps on, and they all just go for it.
Yeah. I like this.
So how does it taste with the raisins?
I like this a lot. It does have like a strange fruity flavor and vibe, but the sweetness of the vanilla and the marshmallows is good.
Marshmallows.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I'm excited about drinking this. It's only 7.5, so it can't be all downhill from here.
Have another one.
Oh, I only buy them singles.
I know.
At Handy Market. But guess when I buy the singles, now it's become a weekly thing. The kids have eggs on all weekend long. So on Friday, I get a beer and a carton of eggs from the Handy Market, because the Handy Market is actually cheaper than Ralph's.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
It's like half the price for eggs.
Wow.
So I love it.
Eggs and beer. The breakfast of Ted. Well, speaking of eggs, let's jump into the Biggest Little Farm.
Oh, it's so great.
Well, to start, I didn't catch where this takes place other than California, but it's a big state. Do you know where it takes place?
I don't know. It felt like Sonoma, but it didn't say. It just said California, like you said. So I was thinking Central or NorCal. It feels NorCal.
It totally does, yeah, because it's kind of got that grungy hippie, you know? It looked nothing like Orange County. So do you see yourself as a farmer?
I would love to be a farmer.
You would?
I would.
Just throw it all in and just go for it.
Just go for
Take
it.
Take the kids like, out there and just be like, honey, we got to go like pluck the strawberries and milk the goats.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't it be amazing? I mean, I think it would be really cool to hang out and to make your kids work on a farm and to, I don't know. It would be neat if it wasn't necessary, if it was like something you did for fun and you could do it without worrying about turning it into money and things like that, I think, is the problem.
So you're financially independent and go for it.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have to worry about, like, well, how am I going to, like, well, I guess you could grow your food and kill your, and raise your animals for food. I hate to say kill them, but you do.
Right.
No, but.
That's what you do.
Yeah. So, okay, I get it. Like, you have, like, a bunch of chickens or you have, like, you know, the eggs and you have, you're growing broccoli, whatever. So, sure, that's how you eat, let's say. All healthy. You're hopefully doing it organically and meaning not using a lot of like chemical pesticide things, even though you probably have to use some.
Oh yeah, they had tons of problems with that, right?
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to worry about paying for like the mortgage so you don't have to go back like to the city or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then like in my yard right now, I have a winter garden with broccoli, cauliflower, red cabbage, and the problem I have in the summertime with my apples and so on is worms. You know, I don't spray, but then I get like half the yield. I have to throw away like all these amazing big Fuji apples.
Oh, you have Fuji apples, but they're worm hold.
Yeah, they get like these worms that are like, I mean, I don't know, they're like a quarter inch by like an eighth inch, these little fat things.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because they're eating all my apples.
How about you? Would you like to go to a farm?
Well, go to a farm is different.
Oh, yeah. I mean, run a farm?
No, not at all. So the reason I wouldn't is just it's too much work. Like, it's not that it's too much work. I'm not opposed to work. It's that it's not the work I want to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? I would like because we have a half acre here. So we talked about getting chickens and, you know, I want to expand our garden and I want to plant more fruit trees and, you know, I want to do all this stuff. And then it's like, well, let's go like mountain bike riding or something, or let's go, you know, to Europe for a couple weeks. Well, I can't just be like, hey, neighbor. Hey, friendly neighbor. You could have an egg if you find one. Will you take care of my farm for me? Like, I'd rather just do other stuff.
It's too tethered. Too tethering for you.
Yeah, you're too tied to the land, you know? I'd rather just get out once in a while and just go take pictures and do other things, you know?
And you can't hook a plow to a bike, so it doesn't really work like that.
I mean, you can. You might not get very far. You know, I'll hook Jake to a plow.
There you go.
He'll be like my oxen. But so a documentary like this, I mean, I'm watching this trailer and it looks really cool. I can't wait to see it. You know, it looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I question is how long does a documentary like this take? Because it's like, do you start with the baby? Let's go buy a farm and start farming. I have a great idea. Let's make a documentary film about this. Like, where does that come in? Because when you look at like how long, like the growth rates of plants and animals and to get things going and the plowing. And I mean, unless they have like an army of people in the background doing stuff that we don't see, how does this work?
It takes forever, it looks like. And they just did some rudimentary filming of, you know, landmark moments of starting the farm. And then they do more filming. And I think they come up with a concept. And I don't know, it looks like they had a secondary crew come in for a lot of like the slow-mo and the time-lapse photography and all that stuff. So I like the way it feels like they had a basic idea and maybe they had like a demo video of what they wanted to do. And then either Neon or the production company that came in looks like they really plussed it out and they did some high-end video. It would almost be like a B-roll, like your B camera is actually more expert than your A camera. And your A camera is the family and filming of the family and those things. And then your B camera goes out and gets that B-roll, which is all that awesome high quality, lengthy footage.
Yeah, it's like the family, I mean, at most probably as a, you know, a GH5 that they're doing some like handheld, like DSLR kind of video.
Right, right.
Probably looking at some iPhone video because, I mean, you know, cell phones take some killer video these days.
Ask Steven Soderbergh. He's done two feature movies with iPhones.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? And then, yeah, you have a crew come in, like you said, and they have the drone footage and they get the time-lapse footage and they're doing like the 4K almost IMAX type things.
Yeah.
You know, and then it looks like, too, they throw in some of the local news that was going on because of the wildfires and things. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, too, if those wildfires are from this past summer.
Yeah, I don't know.
I got that feel, but then there's been fires every summer.
It is a season. It is a fire is a season in California.
Yeah, it's called January 1st to December 31st.
So here's the thing. The thing that struck me about this documentary was that it's from Neon. So Neon's a production company that gave us like Assassination Nation, I, Tonya, and I think one of their first ones was Colossal. I don't know if you saw that movie. It's a little...
Colossal? Never heard of Colossal.
Colossal's a little fantasy movie with Anne Hathaway. But this, to me, it's a venture into a space where Neon doesn't really go. I guess it feels like they are reaching into this documentary space because I feel like documentaries are really kind of becoming more and more feasible with all the other streaming services and with all the different ways to consume media. So where subject matters were maybe less viable, they have now become much more viable.
And documentaries, and this whole show pretty much is documentaries, which is kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
But documentaries, as one who likes documentaries, I think when you look at like when my dad would watch documentaries like on PBS, it was like just some guy droning on in the background about ants.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there's just they show the whole life of ants, but it was like, you know, like Nova or something. And it was like kind of really, I don't know. Well, it was a sleeping pill. And documentaries, I think, have evolved not only for good camera work. Well, you know what? They always had kind of cool camera work, I guess, because how else do you get down in the ant hole?
Right.
But when you look at like Blue Planet or you look at any of them, they're just the footage is amazing and they tell a good story. Like this is not just like here's how to farm and this is how farmers live and it's a boring documentary about farming. Like it's an exciting story that you can see is humorous because when he's standing and facing off with the big bull,
mm-hmm,
and the bull's just stopping staring at him and then the wife shouts out, "Honey, be careful." You know, like there's that humor in there too, that the way they have that juxtaposition going on. So documentaries, I think, are like fun these days, or they tell a good story and they're more compelling because they've like over time we've learned how to capture moments.
Yeah. And it's so funny that you brought up like the nature, the Blue Planet and things like that, because to me this is the other end of the same spectrum where it talks about nature and it talks about that, but it has like this human intersect that all those films kind of lack. You know, we always try to see like a family setting of a group of animals, but we're kind of treating animals and we're kind of giving them human qualities. Whereas this is an actual interface of an actual human family into nature and into the idea of farming, the concept of farming. So I think that's interesting to me. I love that the trailer plays the full range of emotions, like you said, from the comedy all the way down to the drama, like the pig sick and
right.
You don't want the pig to be, you know, to die.
I know you're watching. You're like, oh, the poor pig.
The pig's got a fever.
Yeah.
So I like that. And I think this is another space where my one note is that the quote is a little long. It says, "Mother Nature has never been more inspiring. See it on the biggest screen possible." I think that's, first of all, to me, it feels like an oversell. The images itself, all those slow-mo images, all the like the drone footage, I think that sells the idea that if you are into it, that you'd want to see it on the big screen.
Right.
Last night when we were kind of, the play had ended before our movie ended, and Anne was like, let's leave to go get Audrey, because we had Audrey go with a friend.
That's because she listened to Marcos say, like, do you ever walk out of movies?
She wanted to walk out of Black Panther. Right. And I was like, no, we're staying till the end because, you know, sure, we could get it wherever. We have it on DVD and, you know, we could watch it at home. But we're in the theater. We spent the time and effort to come here. Let's spend another half hour. She can hang out with her friends, you know. So see it on the biggest screen possible. I don't know if you need to say it. If you need to say it, you probably haven't caught those people. But it is inspiring for Mother Nature. And I think that was something that was worth saying. So cut this quote in half for me.
So is it kind of like with you saying that, mm-hmm. needing to see it on the biggest screen, and you already kind of figure you're going to see it on the biggest screen if you're that kind of person. Do you think it's kind of along the same lines of like if a guy has, you know, on his license plate, I'm cool. Like if you have to say it, you probably aren't cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Or yeah, you need, those are the kind of things that other people have to say. Or if you're getting into an audience, then yes.
That's what I mean. Like the critic would say, see it on the biggest screen possible. The movie producer or the distributor, whatever, shouldn't have to tell. It's kind of like saying, none, stay till the end.
Uh-huh. Well, here's one that I'll give him a pass. One of my old bosses, his license plate was Avid Whiz, you know, so Avid is the editing software, and he was an editor before he owned his own production company. So he had Avid Whiz. And the only reason I would give him a pass on having that was he's the president of a post-production company. He doesn't have to be an editor anymore. So it was kind of funny to me that he liked to let people know that he could still edit if he wanted to, because he could, you know, because he's an Avid Whiz.
For sure. And that's the same as a psychologist I worked with. His license plate said IQ tester. And we would all just roll our eyes and just be like, you're just an idiot. So we didn't give him a pass.
You didn't give him a pass.
No. Yeah, I mean, overall, looks amazing. And with our friends, Josh and his wife, Nicole, I mean, they want nothing more than to have a farm. So maybe we'll have to watch it with them, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, and I can live vicariously through him. Although he would probably do more cannabis than anything. But
oh, I'd go to that farm.
Yeah, yeah. It would. They would have field trips to the farm. But last comment, I guess. So I go out, you know, we're in Santa Barbara County, and I go out on these training rides around, and you see, like, you know, farm fields, essentially. And you go by and you're like, "Woo, man, it smells like a skunk around here." Well, it's all the weed they're growing, because now, you know, like, weed is like, you know, you could grow it like recreationally, whatever. And man, I'll tell you, people take advantage.
Yeah.
But all the little towns around here, though, are just complaining because the smell is so pungent.
I would say you can use it and buy it recreationally. I think the growing thing is not recreational at all.
No, that's true. It is regulated, but oh man, it smells, you know, I'll tell you. It's amazing how strong and potent that odor is.
Yeah.
You know, all right. You got anything more?
No, that's it. I definitely want to see it. I'm not going to see it on the big screen.
Right.
And I think that's the interesting sell for Neon, I guess, is to try to push that. But if you're into that, like I said, the drone footage will probably sell that on you, but I don't need to see this on the big screen.
And last comment about the big screen too. Do you think this will be wide release, or is this going to be like selected release? I mean, I can't see this being in like every theater. And
yeah, I don't know. I think you do a small big city run, and then you try to gauge how well it's being received, and then you can either, you know, expand the run or just push it out to video, push it out to streaming.
Yeah, it goes Chicago, New York. Well, maybe LA, New York. If it does okay, then you bump into Chicago, Houston, like bigger markets.
Miami, yeah.
Yeah, Miami. And then, you know, and then if you can, you go bigger, but I agree. I think it'll be a small release and then to streaming.
And I also think, so Neon also did Three Identical Strangers, which was a great documentary from last year, but I think they missed Oscar. So Three Identical Strangers and Won't You Be My Neighbor missed Oscar nominations for documentaries. So I think they might be laying the groundwork of saying like, oh, we're a production company that's not known for documentaries, so let's do more documentaries just so we get a little more doc cred.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that's my final thought on this.
All right, so for more doc cred, let's get into the second.
This is my favorite of the week.
Is it? Yeah.
It is The Inventor.
I like it because it tells you nothing and you're like, well, what the heck? And why is the chick's, and why is the chick's voice like more deeper than me and you?
So
the inventor out for blood in Silicon Valley.
So the inventor out for blood in Silicon Valley is a doc, right? But it's also a book, I guess, nonfiction reporter's journal on Elizabeth Holmes and her development of Theranos. And it's also a podcast. So the fam and I are 2 weeks into a 6-week ABC News podcast about this same story. And I guess you didn't hear about this when it was coming up.
No, I didn't. And I know it's like a fraud that collapsed the company and stuff. And I mean, it seems like those things are kind of running rampant these days.
It is. So after FIRE, we talked about that a little last week. And that's a different kind of fraud. And then, you know, we didn't talk about it, but Bernie Madoff is kind of like one of the most famous fraud cases that kind of touched a lot of industry folks. A lot of rich people had invested with Bernie Madoff. And I think, I don't know whether it's in this trailer or whether it's in the podcast, because I've lost some of the through lines. But the people that investigated Bernie Madoff say that Elizabeth Holmes' story is even more intriguing than Bernie Madoff. And more, it's more far-reaching because the people that she got to and the excesses that she went to were so much greater. And she actually amassed a huge funding, a huge capital pot to build from. So at one point in time, she had $10 billion. So to have a company that's worth $10 billion because you have VC excited and infused, you know, this happened in real time. And the news stories came out about Walgreens in real time. And I remember it. And I follow, I'm kind of a fan of inventors and of tech entrepreneurs. So I was following this story as it was coming through and as things were coming out about it. And it's a kind of, it's an amazing idea. It's an amazing concept that she wanted, that she was trying to sell, and she was trying to will it into existence, that you could test a drop of blood and get 250 test results from a drop of blood, whereas the typical phlebotomist would take 4 or 6 vials, full vials of blood. This isn't the case. You can't do that. But she had people convinced that they could do it, and they were on the path to doing it. So I think when I heard about this, it was during the Walgreens time, when Walgreens had announced that they were going to use her testing, because obviously it would save a huge corporation like Walgreens, you know, millions of dollars to test only a drop of blood and have 250 test results. But as they were failing, she was still worth $10 billion. So my thought is always like acquisition. You know, you go buy Quest Diagnostic and then you let them run the tests and you have something that turns an actual profit, you know? So it's like she could have bought out one of the two major blood testing companies in America. There's only two of them. There's Quest, and I think there's another one, Logic Blood or something like that. But she didn't. She just held on to her lies, and then she continued to push to get more money. And to me, that's the insanity of it, you know? So I don't know. So this trailer, it's a teaser trailer. It's kind of weird to have a teaser trailer when so much is known about the subject. I think I guess it piques interest for maybe an audience like you that doesn't have any knowledge of what's going on.
Zero.
I'm too in deep. So tell me about the teaser trailer and you.
I was surprised it's HBO. I didn't realize like HBO now is doing teasers. Usually the teasers are to get you like, or as Anne might say, therefore the longer the lead, like the
how does she the warrior? She said that they're concerned about the longer the lead, the poorer the product. That's her line.
Yeah, and to get people out of the house away from streaming, I could see teasing and then coming out with the official and then official number two and all this. HBO, I mean, if you're into HBO and you have HBO and so on, and you're already paying that, you know, $10 a month for like HBO on demand and whatever, I mean, you're probably going to watch it anyway, I would think.
Yeah, maybe the teaser has to do more with the idea of timing. I mean, the doc went to Sundance, and that's Sundance, so it had a little bit of a PR buzz. So maybe HBO was caught a little flat-footed on their promotion to this, you know, with ABC coming out with a podcast 2 weeks ago. and it's a 6-week podcast, and now it's coming into like it's swelling into the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
So maybe they're like, HBO's like, oh God, we got to get something out. Well, we haven't cut anything. We'll cut a little, quick little teaser now that it's getting a lot of buzz at Sundance. The full documentary itself is getting buzz at Sundance. So they put this out, and I think it's effective. I mean, I was excited, but maybe I was excited because I knew the story behind it, and I want to consume everything around Elizabeth Holmes. You know what I mean?
So is the podcast done by the same people, or is the podcast completely independent?
No. The podcast is an ABC News podcast. So it's a 6-week podcast from ABC News.
Like one a week?
One a week. Yeah, we're 2 weeks in. And it's so funny because I play tons of podcasts in our commute with, you know, I commute with Anne and Audrey and Bryce. So we commute into school and to work for everyone. And it's about half an hour, 40-minute commute. So I play podcasts pretty much exclusively when I can. So which is more than half the time. So 3 to 4 days a week. Definitely in the mornings, it's easier for me to get the podcasts on because we're not talking about our day and stuff like that. But in that morning time, sometimes other than the daily, I don't think the kids tune in too much to what I'm podcasting or what I'm listening to on a podcast. And with this, when we listened to the first episode, Audrey got out of the car and the first episode wasn't finished. And as she's getting out of the car, she says, "Don't finish this without."
Really? Wow.
So it is enthralling from a 9-year-old all the way up to, you know, what are we, 40 something. So I think it's interesting that, you know, my son, Bryce is nine. He's heard me rant about the pivoting, you know, like pivot, like, you know, acquire the other company and pivot. And, you know, and he's listened to enough podcasts. Like we've heard Stuart Butterfield, who was the founder of Slack. He had to pivot from gaming to Slack. So as I scream at the radio about him pivoting and how great it was that he did that, it was fun to see Bryce make the connection and agree with me that he's like, oh yeah, that's just what you do when you're VC, you know, when you're into,
that's hilarious,
into entrepreneurship. And if something's failing, you don't just give up. You don't just, you know, keep lying about the product that you had hoped would become the new next best thing, next big thing. You pivot, you know. So I love the idea that I'm seeding this idea that you can do anything and you can say you can do anything and you can build a financial cushion to build towards doing something. But if something fails, it's okay to say that it's failed and pivot to the next logical step rather than having it becomes a Ponzi scheme where it's like, can I convince another round of people to invest more money in something that is never going to happen or is so far out from happening that I could never pay back the people, the first round of people, you know?
And the podcast is The Dropout?
Yeah, The Dropout.
Yeah, I've already subscribed. Okay, yeah, I'm gonna check it out, man. It looks cool. I want to learn more about it now that you're so excited, you know?
I'm totally jazzed about this.
Really quick, before we move on, what is the deal with her voice? It can't be that...
Yes, so that's one of those things that Anne loves doing. She loves, like, checking out, I said it's fake.
Like it jumped out at me right away. I'm like, why is her voice so?
So she does that. So she has this whole persona. She's basically created a whole persona that is not her. You know, so she's developed both the way she, all the way down to her voice is all manufactured, and also the way that she carried herself in business. And that's something the podcast goes into. You know, it talks about, you know, her rocking out in the morning because she thought she was alone in the office, you know?
That's hilarious.
So she basically just keeps it all tied in and keeps everything buttoned up. And she has the, you know, Steve Jobs jacket. So she does this marketing job on her whole personal appearance and personal brand.
So she's like a narcissist.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And that makes, I think her blindness to her narcissism makes her able to build a $10 billion company, but then crap it all because she just believes in herself as much as she believes. The thing that she was selling, she was also buying. And I think that's where the failure comes in, you know?
Incredible. Well, I'm going to check out the podcast and then see how that goes. And I'll probably check this out too, because depending on when it comes out, when we subscribe to HBO for Game of Thrones, which really quick, Roku now is allowing people to come and go as they please to things like Stars and Showtime. And so you don't have to like buy in and be anchored to your cable network or anything. So you can like subscribe, watch a show, unsubscribe, subscribe to something different. And it's like flipping the switch on and off, and you just pay for what you're going to watch almost.
Yeah. So it's very interesting that you say that, because it's an idea of turning things on and off. They could watch their subscriptions as to the time frame of a series, right? So like you're gonna apply to HBO, you're gonna subscribe to HBO while Game of Thrones is on for its last season, right?
Yeah, so like 8 weeks, let's say.
And then you're gonna turn it off.
No, because then I'll watch this one.
Oh, but you could watch this one while you're watching that, right? Because it's weekly.
Yeah, and this is only a 2 hour deal though, so yeah.
Yeah, so it's a doc, yeah, so you could watch it during that. So you turn it off, and then HBO has all the metrics from you, how many people unsubscribe after Game of Thrones is off, you know?
Oh, they'll know for sure,
right? So I think there's a cool model that's launching this. It will have launched by the time this podcast comes out, but Filmocracy is a new Kickstarter that's from a bunch of ex-industry, ex-tech, ex-marketing folks, and they're trying to do another streaming platform. And everyone says, yes, another streaming platform. But this streaming platform gamifies movie and TV watching.
So they give you a badge when you watch or something?
Yeah, so basically...
Oh, they do? Okay.
No, as you watch... Yeah, no. So as you watch things, you, the viewer, is asked to give metrics to it. And you know, other than just the thumbs up, thumbs down,
yeah,
they ask for much more detailed metrics so that they can decide how a movie is actually doing or how a piece of media is actually doing. And I think their metrics, they're trying to dial into a deeper understanding of what the viewers are going for. And then they give the viewers rewards from giving them that kind of detailed analysis. So basically, as a viewer, you become an analyst of a film, and you're giving them data, rich, conscious data on what you're viewing, as well as just the viewership data of what you can watch within the space. So I'm interested to see how that develops. I want to talk to those guys, hi to all the Filmocracy guys, and we'll see how that goes.
The one thing I hope they don't do is make it like a Reddit or a Dig when Dig was around, where like you kind of upvote or downvote things, because
right,
then you're going to lose a lot of things. You know, if they don't get upvoted, then some things will never get viewed and they might be good.
Right.
And then like everybody's kind of just watching the same stuff. And I mean, it's a way to say like, well, this sucks, so we're going to downvote it and it's not going to get play.
Right.
It's kind of democratizing it. But at the same time, you know, just because everyone eats at Red Lobster doesn't mean it's good seafood.
Yeah.
And that's the problem I have with that kind of stuff. You know, you might lose those things that you're interested in, but if not enough people are interested in that, you'll just never see it.
That's interesting.
You know, and it might be very good. It just might not have a big
following
or a big demand. It might not have a great demand, you know? So
right.
I might want to see a documentary about whatever, bicycle racing. But like how many people, you know, truth be told, are into bicycle racing? Not a lot.
Right.
And because of that, it'll never rise to the top, because there's just not a big enough audience for it, even though it might be an incredible documentary.
Yeah. Cool.
Speaking of documentaries and incredible ones that I'm sure a lot of people would be into, Apollo 11.
Do you want to take a break?
Yeah, we could take a break.
All right, let's take a break.
If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at @TJunkiesPodcast and Instagram at @TrailerJunkiesPodcast. You can also comment on the episodes at TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. Our email is info@TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. And you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it.
But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And they may well ask, why climb the highest mountain? Why, 35 years ago, fly the Atlantic? Why does Rice play Texas? We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone. and one we intend to win.
We're back to Apollo 11. We had to go Apollo check ourselves 11. To make sure we can man up. I went in the mirror and I said, Jim, you can do it. Jim, you can do it. So, Ted, do you see yourself as an astronaut going to the moon?
No, I do not. So it's so funny. Like you, we talk about, you know, documentaries are fun. You know, this is a bit of a trailer perspective on documentaries. And we did a lot of documentaries in this episode. But I think that's the thing about documentaries is the documentary really puts you in the place of the actual people.
Living vicariously through them as a farmer.
You can live vicariously through these farmers, and then you can live vicariously through this venture capitalist that fell on our face, you know? But you could also reach for things that you would never even aspire to. I think the dedication and the drive and the sheer will of becoming an astronaut to me is something that I admire, but I do not ever want for myself.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with this, it'd be a little bit easier, though, to get on board, you know, because, you know, they just take you to that soundstage in Arizona. Right? You think they're going to show the soundstage?
It was, to me, it had a bit of that. So First Man was the big theatrical piece that has gotten a lot of snubs now from the Oscar season that we're in.
Yeah.
And it kind of fed into the conspiracy theory where they made a movie about the moon landing, and it kind of fed the conspiracy theorists to say, see, look, it was just a movie.
Right.
They
right.
made a movie about it. Well, this is a documentary, and this documentary shows, it kind of does there are a few behind the scenes kind of pieces where they show clapboards and they show a little extra film roll. And to me, that does the same thing where it feeds into this conspiracy. I do not buy into that at all.
No, I'm only kidding. Yeah.
0%. I know you're kidding, but we, you know, this does go out into the world where anybody can do anything with it. So I just want to make sure I say that up front. I was trying to place as the faces came up through the trailer, and Buzz Aldrin's face is so distinguishable, so notice, you know, I know what Buzz looks yeah. like, you know, as an older man. So to see Buzz as a younger man and to have, I don't even know who the other guy is, but to have the other guys talking and to have Buzz just look up, that was the part that grabbed me. And it was just like, I know this story. I know it from history. I know it from the history books. I know it from school, but I don't know it like this. And I think to me, that's the part that really grabs me about this trailer.
Right. What I like too is when, you know, you said the behind the scenes and everything, and they're showing like the video, but then there's the guy, it's about in 17 seconds in, and they show the videographer in the clean room, and he's wearing like the white suit, you know, and yeah. he has that old school camera. And then the other thing too, at about a minute 11, they show a shot with a room. All the men have white shirts and black ties, and there's that lone woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like in the days of like the Mad Men era and all this stuff. I mean, how does she get that job? And honestly, like, I want to hear her story.
Right. she's like the Hidden Figures version of this story.
You know, when you think about it though, like, that was a day when women weren't in those positions. They didn't have those jobs. I mean, it was like amazing that this one woman is there. And it wasn't even like, you know, nowadays you might say, oh, it's the token woman or something. But then it was like,
right.
I mean, like, she really earned her way to that seat.
Yeah.
You know? And like I said, I just want to hear her story because, like, in a male dominated field like it was, how did she get there?
Yeah.
So cool.
It's amazing. And, you know, who knows what we'll learn about that part. But I guess I also missed this, and part of the reason I put this together was this is another Neon documentary. So Neon's distributing it, but it feels like, I think they say it's a BBC doc as well. So I guess there's an executive at Neon who says, we are releasing this in theaters. Let's make sure people see this in theaters. You know what I mean? So both these trailers, the first trailer, the farm trailer, and this trailer have these quotes or these cards. This trailer has has a card that says featuring never before seen 70 millimeter footage.
Right.
So that statement unto itself, that to me, that's a more impactful way for people to say, see it in the theater.
And the 70 millimeter footage is kind of like that era's IMAX film, let's say.
Oh, definitely.
Right? I mean, it looks so high def. Do you think they digitally enhanced and cleaned up the film, or that's just how it comes out of the camera?
Oh, I think...
Or both.
They probably did whatever was best for each of the scenes. I mean, to see the separation of the Apollo stages, I mean, that's the crispest I've ever seen it.
Oh, the film, it's so, like, you know, usually you see stuff from back then, and it's, like, all grainy, and, you know, like, it just looks... Yeah. It looks like it's old, but this stuff looks like...
It's all been mashed through the NTSC, through a television broadcast, and they went back, and they know they have television footage of it, so they searched the archives of all the stock footage of something that has happened in history. But then they end up going to the stuff that's been broadcast. And to me, the thing, working in television, as a quality control person that has one step in the process of pushing something to air on television, I will look at a piece of video, a promo, and I will say that, you know, oh, this has like a glitch in it or something, you know, or this looks a little, you know, a little stepped on. It looks like it's a little lower quality. And I'll always ask the vendor to provide a better quality if that happens. You know, it's happened a handful of times in the past 10 years. But every time that I see something that's 100% crystal clear, like full 4K, and it comes through my system and I'm watching it to QC it, it's so funny to me that I'm quibbling about the video, and I pull in a creative director, and the creative director and I look at it and we're like, all right, this looks great. All right, we got it to a good place. But this is the best it's ever going to be. The minute it goes out to broadcast, they stomp on it, they compress the signal, they'll downgrade it because it's a promo, they won't send it through full HD, you know what I mean? They mess up the signal so much to get to broadcast that looking for pristine video for your job makes stuff like this amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
Sorry to nerd out on you like that.
No, we need the nerding out. I like, too, the political dig, you know, witness the last time we were one. Yeah, because, I mean, we're so, like, partisan these days.
Yeah.
And it also says coming soon. I mean, do they really think we're that much of idiots? It's going to drop. It's going to air or be released on July 20th. That was the landing date.
Oh, that'd be great.
When else are you? If they don't do it on July 20th, I mean, they totally missed it.
Well, that's your note. That's your executive note for this trailer, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's when it, because let's put it this way, if they, you know, Memorial Weekend, I mean, really, Memorial Weekend, why not July 20th? I don't even know what day that is this year. I don't care if it's a Tuesday, that's the day it has to go to the theater.
Has to drop.
It has to. I mean, come on, 50 years to the day, mm-hmm. Right? You can't do it on like Memorial Weekend or whatever it is, but yeah, I mean, talk about big brass balls. These guys were like the premier human species. They were like as fit as Olympic athletes, brilliantly intelligent, smart, calm under the worst pressure possible. I mean, they had, I forget what it was exactly, but they had something like 3 seconds left of fuel, or they would have crashed and died into the moon's surface. Stayed calm, boom, landed it, and they use like a pencil, you know, a Faber Castell number 2 to like do some repair work or something. I mean, these guys are just incredible.
No, they're rock stars. It's amazing. And the trailer sets it up so nicely. If you don't know anything about it, like I watched the trailer again, and you know, we know Armstrong is talking. He's the mouthpiece. But for me, it's like it's the juxtaposition between Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, where Buzz Aldrin's like this, the muscle. He's like the meat. You know, it's like if you need spare balls, he's got it.
Right. You know? It's
like, he looks at the camera steely-eyed and he just, you know, glances away. And even in, like I said, in those moments where we hear Armstrong talking and then we see Buzz Aldrin, it's just amazing to me that you could put together this team. It's awe-inspiring.
And just so thankless, too, because Michael Collins is the command guy who just keeps orbiting the moon. And, you know, it's not like he's, and maybe they did, I don't know, but it's not like he's sitting there like, well, I want to go on the moon.
Oh my God. Could you imagine going all that way and then just saying, all right, guys, have fun, you know, making history. I'll be here in the orbiter.
Yeah, I'll be here just, you know, like radioing back. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, they're thankless, though. It's like, that's my job. I'm here to do it. And let's do it. You know,
everyone knows their place and they stick to it. And it's amazing. So like all these documentaries that we've covered, it's, you know, from this person that pushed herself in front of everyone to be this huge accomplishment of nothing. So we go from a time, and this is interesting to look at the juxtaposition of these two trailers to two documentaries. A woman who, you know, because it's what you do in the VC space, you put your idea out there and then you make people invest in an idea. And then on Apollo 11, you invest yourself into the idea and then you go out and you achieve it. But it's kind of it's a time and place that is not what we are today. So I get that it's a political statement to say the last time we were one, and then to show the rapid succession of all the different people that were looking up into the sky as the Apollo mission launched. But it is a different time and a different understanding of the way that people accomplish things. So now you must sell the accomplishment before anything is truly invested of yourself. Well, except for podcasting, right? Like we've right. We've invested a lot of ourselves into this before anything has come of it. So, you know, I think there's still space for it. But it's interesting to say that the zeitgeist has said, like, we could sell dreams and instead of making the dream real and selling that.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So you threw one more trailer at me and you wanted to cover. So why don't we hit that really quick and then we'll roll on out of here.
Awesome. So the last trailer of the week is Hobbs and Shaw.
Hobbs?
Or should I say Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole marketing piece in here, and part of the reason I threw it in, I know it's the hot trailer of the week. It's got The Rock. It's got Handsome Rob. I don't know his real name. And it's got Idris Elba, who we've known now because I'm also watching the Marvel Challenge, the TJP Marvel Challenge, and I'm four movies in, so we saw a little bit of Idris Elba in Thor.
Wait, four? Since last week you watched four movies?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Okay, so you said let's do the Marvel Challenge, so I wanted to watch them as well, but I don't want to turn on a Netflix delivery queue, but I found a video store, Star Video, on my way to work, and I applied for a card and I got a new cool video card. And they said, when you apply for a card, you get four free 5-day rentals.
Wow.
So I got four movies for free for applying for this card, Star Video, here in the Valley. And I got Iron Man. We own Iron Man 2, so I didn't get that. We got Hulk, Thor, and what's the fourth one?
I don't know. I'm not as knowledgeable about the Marvel order.
Oh, we only got three.
Ah.
I guess it's because I own Iron Man 2 that I said four. So
okay,
we could watch the first four. But so Idris Elba plays a superhuman in this trailer. And I think to me that's the departure. So it's funny to say Fast and Furious presents, because Fast and Furious is like as if it's selling. So a legacy card is not enough for this production. So typically you would take the producers of the Fast and the Furious.
Right.
Right. And you would sell that as your legacy card, and you'd have that as your legacy card, and you'd say, all right, this is our go-to spot where we have to say in every single piece of promotion that this is from the producers of the Fast and the Furious. But then they said, oh, that's not enough. We needed to be always a part of the title almost to say Fast and the Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw, because I guess they're characters within the universe of Fast and the Furious and they're part of a franchise. But the fact that Idris Elba is a superhuman and he is imbued with bulletproof skin, to me, ventures into a realm of unbelievability that goes outside of the Fast and the Furious universe.
Right.
So I know you're not a fan of Fast and Furious. Have you seen any of the movies?
Yeah. Well, I definitely saw the first. I think I saw Tokyo Drift or something.
You saw the first and the third. Okay, good.
Yeah. Or what was the second one? Maybe I saw the second one too. Yeah, maybe.
Too Fast, Too Furious.
I don't remember. Third. I don't even know why I saw like two or three of them.
So to me, the naming convention of Fast and the Furious is ridiculous, and it is part of the lore and is part of the draw of what makes the Fast and the Furious movie so great. Back in the days of Blockbuster, I remember one of the only stories of Blockbuster is I remember standing in front of the Fast and the Furious wall whenever the last Fast and the Furious came out when Blockbuster was still a thing.
Yeah.
And I was standing there in front of a stranger and her mother. So this mother-daughter pair. And they were trying to figure out which Fast and Furious they had watched as well. And all the names of the Fast and Furious movies have nods to the idea that they're numbers in a sequence, but none actually have numbers, except for Tokyo Drift, I think, is number 3. But Too Fast, Too Furious is 2, and I don't know the rest. But we stood there for a good 10 minutes going through the idea of like reading the title and saying, oh, this one alludes to the fact that it is the 4th. This one alludes to the fact that it is the 5th. So this does a nice thing where it takes the numbering out of the title, we know it's from the producers of the Fast and Furious, but we don't know much else. It feels like the characters of the Fast and Furious might have been taken out of that universe and put into another universe where supernatural things can happen to Idris Elba like this. Idris Elba's character is yet another mega star, mega action star that can carry something like this. So this is a triple bill of an action star. It's called Calvin and Shaw, but it really feels like it's a triple bill.
Calvin, Shaw, and Idris.
Oh, did I say Calvin and Shaw?
Yeah.
Oh, see? And that was it. So it's right. Hobbs and Shaw. But to me, whenever I say Hobbs, I think Calvin and Hobbs.
Right. Calvin.
So the 7.5% of the slope shake is definitely hitting me because it's 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Now it's 7 o'clock, 7:30. But yes, so I love the idea of Hobbs and Shaw. I love the idea of the name too. The name, it harkens back to Tango and Cash, which I don't know if you're a fan of Tango and Cash.
Yeah, it's like that buddy like action comedy thing.
Buddy action comedy, but it really dials into the Tango and Cash because Tango and Cash were not friends. And I think this dials in the fact that The Rock and Handsome Rob aren't friends in this either.
Yeah.
You know? So I think the reluctant buddy cop of 48 Hours and Midnight Run and, you know, Tango and Cash is definitely checked off the list as far as things that are telegraphed through this trailer.
Yeah, do you think the editing for these kind of movies is a little bit, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels or The Italian Job or even the Bourne movies in a way with like the fast edits and...
Yes, well, how dare you that Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels is a step above
all of those other movies
because so he did things that he did not have the money to do. It's an amazing piece of art beyond that. But yes, all the other ones, it is paint by numbers and you have to follow the formula.
Exactly.
I think you have to, and the trailer too. The trailer is set up in a way that you have to set up the villain as impossible to defeat. And I think it's done that. And then you set up the buddy part of it as, oh, how can we pull these two together? You know what I mean? You set up all these impossible factors and then you set them against each other and then you just let it fly. So I think it is a little bit of a mind-numbing event or mind-numbing task for trailer editors, but there are certain checkboxes that you must check.
Yeah, otherwise, if you don't follow the formula, like the audience is going to pick up on it because they're used to seeing, like once you go down that path of that certain edit style, if you deviate, like, or you do something different, the audience will call you on it because they're used to seeing it.
And it's the audience that you are playing to. It's like, if you know that you can get 20 million people, you know, if you know that you have a set audience that is in the theater for this, then you play to them.
Exactly.
You know, you play to them and you make sure that they are 100% bought in and sold on going to see your movie. Because these kind of action movies are, you know, we talk about Neon trying to sell you to go to the theater to see these documentaries that work well on the small screen. Apollo 11, maybe not. You know, there's a justification for that. But I think there's an uber justification to say that the only thing taking you to the theater now is the action sequence that you cannot not experience at home. You know, the reason I stayed at Black Panther was to see the sunset, you know, as Killmonger dies, you know, it is to see the set pieces that these filmmakers have made for you in this experience that is separate from the home viewing experience.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing I thought about too, when we were talking about editing and things, so, and you brought back Apollo 11, I do have one last comment question about that. So watching something like Apollo 11 in the theater, and let's say IMAX, if they bring it to IMAX, movies are bigger than life, right? That's why you have Foley. That's why when someone's walking on a gravel road, you hear it so loudly because it's just some guy making you walk on a gravel road. Do you think Apollo 11 will do a lot of Foley as far as rocket launches and things, or are they sticking strictly with the sound of the day?
Yeah, I don't know. I would think that they would stick with the sound of the day because...
Not to make it even sound bigger than it was like in the theater, because what if the sound is really just not as dramatic as the video? I mean, you got to like match the two, I would think.
Well, I think you have to play to each scene to its point, you know? I think there are going to be times in that, command center, what is it called?
Command center, well, yeah.
No, it's called something. Yeah, whatever it is. Where you said the woman's in that command center, you know, at Houston, I guess, where... And there are going to be times in Houston where you want to be able to hear a pin drop.
They come from there, a place called Houston.
Then we will go there too. To rule.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like, everyone's holding their breath when they're going to land, and, you know, and...
And you want to believe that you've built your story in such a way that the audience, too, will take a breath and hold their breath waiting for that next thing. Wait, you know, you've created a space where you've pulled the audience along and you've made them part of the story so much so that when they hear the audio drop out completely out of a video, or, you know, we're getting wild audio and it's the silence wild audio, that, you know, you're waiting on it and you're listening intently for that next word. Because
exactly,
they only had, I mean, audio was the first thing coming back from there, right? I mean, the one small step, you're waiting to hear back from these astronauts more than anything. So I think that the way the audio must be played true to form rather than putting in Foley. But I could see where they're missing something and they could add Foley, but I don't know whether that would be...
I could see it on the launch maybe with the Foley, you know, or someone's tapping away at a keyboard or something like that. So you hear the clickety-clacks. But you're right, though. I think when it comes to the actual, whatever the noise is while on the moon, like, it's got to be that muffled sense. Otherwise, if it's too clean, then it's too, like, I don't know, like, conspiracy theorist.
Then it feels fake. Yeah. Then it exactly. Feeds the fakeness. It feeds into the uncanny valley of something where you're like, if you're questioning whether the audio is Foley or the true audio from the thing, then they've lost you.
Yeah. So kind of like how Tango and Cash, I mean, Calvin and what is it called?
It's called Hobbs and Shaw.
Hobbs and Shaw. Kind of like how they lost me. I definitely...
Wait, so one last thought on Hobbs and Shaw. Did you like... So I appreciated the score to the trailer.
Okay.
We often go into the audio and the score. From the opening piano keys, you know, if you know the song Why Can't We Be Friends, you know, yeah, that's what they were doing, and it kind of, it builds into the traditional song, you know, and it does the same thing that Us did, where it takes the song and it takes it through different paces and different things. So unlike the thing that we don't like, where you just turn pop songs into operatic songs, which I guess is Marcos's favorite thing about trailers, I like the idea of taking songs that are so recognizable in one sense, and then throughout the trailer, changing the way that you do things.
Yeah, yeah.
The way that you express it. But it's basically a deconstruction of a song. So more than operatic, just recreation of a song, this deconstruction of a song where it reveals itself. And then by the end of it, I would say, isn't this too on the nose? Why Can't We Be Friends to two guys that's kind of like a non-buddy, buddy comedy?
Yeah.
Buddy action movie. But I think it plays perfectly because in the beginning, beginning, it's, you know, slowly built to the idea where it's earned the on-the-nose comment at the end, because the on-the-nose comment will sell it to the widest audience, and that's what you're trying to appeal to by the end of this trailer.
Yeah, no, the sound and the music was, the editing is fine and everything. It, you know, it's just, these are the kind of movies I'm not really into, you know?
And you're already in overload because you're doing the whole Marvel challenge, so...
Yeah, that's got me at my limit, you know.
What did you think about the first Iron Man? We just watched it recently this week, too, so.
You know, you got to suspend disbelief for sure. I mean, he's in a cave, and then he makes, like, an Iron Man suit, and the guy saves him with, like, embedding an electromagnet in his chest. I mean, you know, it's like, how is it that, like, just on a whim in a cave, they come up with all this stuff, but yet people in the at Harvard Medical School are struggling to, you know, invent anything for, like, saving lives, you know? I mean, there's that.
Right. Well, there is a person out there, and I don't know if he's still alive, but he needed a heart transplant, and they didn't have a heart for him, so they created a turbine, and they replaced his heart with a turbine, basically like putting in something that's similar to a dialysis machine in his chest. And so instead of a heartbeat, he just has a constant turbine that's pushed pumping blood through his whole body. And I know that this worked, and he lived for an amount of time, but I think that that is technology that should definitely be advanced, because so how many people are waiting for heart transplants and are dying in the meantime, you know, and because you don't get a heart donor. So there is a level of science that is pushed forward by the Star Treks of the world and these fantasy films and these action films. So it's always interesting to me that the science that follows these kind of pieces.
And I don't know. And then the Jeff Bridges coming out with the bigger Iron Man outfit. You know, and I don't know. It just seemed like, I didn't mind the movie, but it's just, they're always uh-huh. so far-fetched. I have a hard time suspending disbelief sometimes.
You can't get into it.
But,
yeah,
you know, it is what it is. I'll let you know how the Hulk goes. I was a fan of the Hulk when I was a kid.
Okay, cool.
So I've never seen this mm-hmm. version.
It's fun to watch it 10 years later after, you know, you watched the first time around. But it's fun to me because I think the scale is properly drawn. I think, you know, for its time, it didn't know it was the front end of this franchise.
And is this Hulk also rom-com guy, Mark Ruffalo?
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
It's Ed Norton Jr.
Oh, okay. So we'll get into that then. So.
All right. So we'll definitely talk about that next week, I think.
Awesome. All right, Ted. Well, let's get our day going here. And I know you're probably ready to crack your second beer.
That's right. Get on your ride. I got to go to church.
Oh, I see where you're going. So you get started at home. It's kind of like before you go out drinking, like you start at home before you go to the bar. So you're going to go to church. Now you're going to take some communion.
I do not drink the wine at church.
All right, man. Well, go repent for your sins this morning. Yeah, happy that your power's back and we were able to do this.
That's right. Have a good week.
All right, you too, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.